Near me?
Hello, Mike. Does sound like we can hear you. Yeah.
Hi, Mike.
Great.
So
Hi.
this is my cousin Dale, by the way, because we've spoken before, but you've never met Dale.
Hi, Mike. Nice
Hi,
to meet
Dale.
you.
So, how are things going today then, Mike? What have you been up to?
Oh, I've been teaching a class once a week at the San Francisco Conservatory, and it's they have a special program called TAC, Technical Applied Composition. And so it's basically composition for media and electronic composition. So it's kind of cool. It's got this vocational side and then also a more kind of avant-garde, pushing the outer boundaries of classical composition. You know what I mean?
Awesome, man. Are you getting a wide range of students then from all walks of life?
And from all over the world, and they're all really pretty high level, pretty talented kids, and not just kids too. I say that, but some of them are a little older and kind of revisiting, wanting to learn, kind of broaden their education a bit. And so it's just once a week. It's like a couple hours in the morning, but I really enjoy it, and it's a good, it's always teaching someone else how to do something is a really good way to review what you do and don't know, But yeah, they just had graduation last week, and it was super awesome. John Adams was there and spoke, gave a great commencement speech. I mean, it's John Adams, so it's not to be surprised, I suppose. But yeah, it's a pretty cool scene.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I wish I could get on that course myself, to be honest.
Yeah.
It just keeps getting better. Duren McDonald, who you might know from Gang, and he's worked on a lot of different games and whatnot, kind of really was one of the first people in there putting that together. And now there's Lenny Moore and Clint Bajakian, and Robert Gatley's there, Matt Levine. So it's got a pretty heavy hitting crew of veteran game composers, working there. So
Wow, that's
it's pretty
incredible.
cool.
Yeah, man.
Well, one thing we didn't get to talk about because we obviously went so in depth into the stuff that you've actually done is I never got to ask you a simple question like, what is your history with games? Did you have any history playing them yourself before joining Valve?
Yes, definitely. But it's kind of like a but my life has been so busy that it's been there are like really intense periods of gameplay for over decades. I remember a friend of mine bought the first Pong,
Right.
the actual Pong machine when it came out. And so we played that thing to death. He bought a bunch of the games that came out after it, but it was sort of this, I mean, I guess Pong didn't have any other games now that I think of it. It was the Atari that ended up having some other games. I was there right at the very beginning, pretty heavily playing that. And then my dad got a Commodore when I was kind of a young teenager, and I got really into, I can't even remember, these were games you'd have to get on floppy disk, I mean, actual floppy, not the little hard floppy, but the large, what is it, I forget the size, 5 inch or whatever those floppies were.
Yeah, and even cassette tapes on old spectrums, things like that.
Right, yeah, exactly. And I started, that's when I very first started learning to program too. Wrote my own little text-based maze game, And then after that, it's interesting. There was a period there where I started buying Macintoshes. It was so, you kind of fast forward a few years, I started buying the early Macs because those were the first computers really to have audio software. Actually, no, I take it back. That's right. I moved to Japan. I lived in Tokyo for a couple of years in the early 80s, like
Wow.
83, 84. And I had a Yamaha CX-7, which was this like funny, I think it was a Z80 based, the Z80 is this processing chip from 8-bit, as I recall, with 16-bit memory space. And it was like this keyboard. It was all contained in the keyboard that had like a, you know, a video. It had a card in it that had some kind of video out that you would plug into your television or some monitor. And then you would put cartridges in it, and those cartridges would allow you to, like, there was a sequencing cartridge. There was a four mod FM synth, and there was, God, what else? There was a cartridge that had BASIC, right? And so the programming language. And so I did a ton of work on that computer, along with a bunch of keyboards that I had set up in my studio there in Tokyo, and did a ton of work, you know, for that, in that era. I mean, I was really young, but I managed to win in a contest. It's kind of hard to explain, but I didn't win. I got into the top 10 and then got third place after doing a performance. I think first place was Toa Toa. You remember from D-Light? You remember D-Light?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That DJ guy was kind of this young prodigy in Tokyo at the time, and ended up working on a bunch of Ryuichi Sakamoto's records, who was there and was one of the judges. And he tied with a good friend of mine who was in this underground noise art band, kind of Bill Laswell style, called Nom Pen. And they tied for first and second, and then I got third. And so I got an agent out of it and got to do some work for Ryuichi Sakamoto and a bunch of other big name Japanese fashion, you know, in Japan at the time. I imagine it's still probably fairly true. Fashion and art and kind of the avant-garde world were all intertwined, you know, like it's sort of like that movie Lost in Translation.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be absolutely giant billboards of Joseph Beuys advertising whiskey, you know. You don't get really more avant-garde than Joseph Beuys, you know, in a lot of ways. And so, I don't know, it was a really awesome period. And so I did a lot of music on that computer. But I also did my first real, like, programming. I programmed an animation tool that was used at a TV station, and then also did another kind of animation interactive thing that I did some performance art with. And it didn't really have game. It was cassette based, just like you were saying. I remember someone saying, like, oh, you got to try this thing called DOS. Like, you can actually, you get a floppy disk and the system runs off the floppy. And I'm just thinking, like, whoa, my mind is totally blown, you know? And so that there was that computer, and then the Mac kind of came around. And in that era, like, I was managing, that's when I started getting games. You know, there was a bunch of Prince of Persia, those games
The originals
that were actually available, right, that were available on the Mac too, right? Mm-hmm. Because Mac wasn't quite as far out yet. But then at the same time, I had started right around that exact same time. In fact, I started working for Euphonics, kind of designing and implementing their early console features. Right, and, you know, Euphonics was the first company to do digitized Surface. You know, like Surface controllers that are then like using a big. Back then, it was this giant, DIN connecting cable that went to a tower that had analog processing on it.
Right.
Super high end consoles. I think the number two or three console we sold to Hans Zimmer. Michael Jackson's guy bought one. Whoa, and so wow. I was like implementing features directly for those guys. But at the same time, it was all on PC. So we started playing some PC kind of early LAN-based games there. After that, there was a kind of a break because I was just – I left that job because I wanted to really play music more. Mostly either played stuff on the Mac when I was on tour 90% of the time, so I played tons of arcade games, you know. God, what was the tower defense game? Rampart, right? It was two wheels on the thing, and you kind of build your lay out your castle and then shoot with your cannons, take turns shooting at each other. I love that one on tour. But then I bought a boat. I always had all the consoles. So I had, you know, the Nintendo one and beat Mario, whichever version it was at that time. And then got the Sega and totally beat Sonic and was totally hot on all the, you know, the Kung Fu games. I just played those, you know, be home off tour and video games all day. And then, I'm sorry, I'm giving you the full rundown.
No, this is good.
And then when I started doing animation, I started working in animation studios and ended up in film studios and whatnot. And that is really when I got hooked into, I mean, I had a PC at home too, because of some other like kind of development jobs I was doing on the side. And you know, I got into the earliest, the very first hallway shooter, you know, not Doom, but
that was Franken, what came to mind.
Yeah.
Wolfenstein.
Thank you.
Yes.
Jesus. So I had that when it first came out. And then right after that, I started working in studios, like in this animation studio, and we were developing a game. And so that's when I first got really exposed to, like, 5 o'clock rolls around, everybody turns on their game, because we're all in a network, right? And so we all just start playing multiplayer, you know, Doom and Quake and so on and so forth. And that's sort of how I got into those games, is because I worked in those sorts of studios for about 10 years. And there, even when we went to visit Pixar, God, it was almost 15 years ago now, Valve, I mean, you know, those guys, Pixar, you know, 5 o'clock, same thing. Everybody turns on Team Fortress. At least at the time, they were all playing Team Fortress. And they were, you know, big fans. And because everything, you know, you have all these high-end PCs and everything's on a network. And so, you know, I never really got into the home LAN party kind of thing. Like, you know, like all the Australian guys, you know, Robin Walker and those guys used to all, you know, drag their computers into each other's living rooms and have big parties that way. But I was always exposed to it through the film studios. And so that kind of runs right up into Valve, you know? So,
well, I assume you was playing a lot of Portal and stuff for work as well.
Yeah. Honestly, ever since Valve, I don't play games nearly as much as I used to, oddly, you know, because I play so much during the day or, you know, and I have access to all of them. I just don't really have time. I also, you know, had kids right around then and, you know, time is thin. But
it's like working at a chocolate factory. You don't have the chocolate after about 2 months of working there. You're sick of it.
The cobbler's son's shoes, you know. That's not actually true. It's not that's totally the opposite, because my kids like have access to all the newest VR gear and they play plenty of games, you know.
I know how it is, because we do this weekly show all about video game music and I'm obsessed with it, but at the same time I barely play anything myself, because, you know, there's so much going on in life as you get older and older.
Yeah. I mean, I really, not a week goes by that I don't like kick myself saying like, I should be playing more games. Like there's so many good ones out there. It's just, I don't know when, cause I'm also, you know, I also just have a lot of work to do pretty much always. Yeah. So.
Well, it's cool to hear that you had all the different systems and played so much different arcade stuff. And I know you're a technically minded person and you mentioned FM Synthesis when we last chatted. It's kind of an odd question, but did you ever have a preference between the different console sound chips back in those days?
You know, I like, it's been a while since I've really looked at the chip names. It was really great when Plogue came out with the chiptunes, or I forget what that exact plugin is called. I think it's called Chiptune. And like, it's the chips have the real names and like the actual behavior and functionality of those early chips. And so I just love that. But I can't remember what they're called off right now. It's just been like my RAM has been emptied and it's been filled with other shit since then. I always really, really liked the Nintendo sound. Like they just really nailed it. The composers used it really well. Like, I don't know. I know I've said it before in other interviews, but I'm just such a huge fan of the Nintendo sounds and the compositions and that chip. Like, I've used it, like the virtual version I did for Portal. I'm sure I've said this in interviews too, but I did start out trying to like circuit bend an old Nintendo machine just to, you know, to do it the cool way. And then eventually when I found the plug-in, it was just so much easier. I just don't have time to circuit bend a console just to get some weird sounds out of it. I really am a big fan of those sounds, you know?
Yeah, I'm heavily researching all that stuff now because some of my upcoming episodes are specifically about the sound chip, so I want to get everything right. And I remember you saying about you using some FM synthesis in the original Portal, and back when we spoke, that sailed right over my head. But now I find that really interesting because I've been learning about FM synthesis and what it is. Even you know what it is, don't you, Dale? No.
You put me on the spot now. I remember you telling me last week.
If I say the word waveform, does that remind you?
Yeah, one waveform to modulate another.
Well done. He's right, isn't he, Mike?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. You know,
it's most basic.
I lack the details.
Yeah, I mean, in the old days they called it additive synthesis as opposed to subtractive, right? Because you're taking two waveforms and molting them together, basically, or many of them. You know, it's funny. I had the original DX7 when it came out in Japan too. That was, you know, it's kind of one of those machines that was super readily available in Tokyo. But at the time, you know, I found it really, and like I said, I had it was like a four oscillator synth or FM synth that I had in the CX7. And you know, it even had a little graphic display. So, you know, it kind of explained it to you, but I understood it like technically, but I could never really get it to do. I just kind of tended to use the patches that were built into it. There's a guy that lives in Seattle that a few of the guys on our team just had lunch with him. He designed the original DX7 default patches, which is pretty, that's a pretty epic, you know,
yeah, that's incredible.
Tale to tell. Like, it's a pretty big deal to have done that because those were, nobody really knew anything about, I mean, not nobody, but like in the consumer market, professional market, FM synthesis was really brand new at the time. And so, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, one last little area we'll jump into if you've got the time, double check, is the visual effects stuff. Because when you were going over your history with playing games, you kind of covered how big your career is as well in the course of it. And you've worked on all these different visual effects for films like The Matrix, Dale, and Lord of the Rings, things like that. And it's not something we covered at all in our last chat. So, like, how did you get into that? And is there any parallel whatsoever with your music career?
Yes. I mean, I got into it because I had been, you know, in this underground rock band for 10 years and had been on tour pretty much nonstop. That entire time, you know, we were home a decent amount, but you know, to tour 6 to 8 months out of a year is pretty grueling. And I was just sort of done with music at the moment. I just didn't like, I wasn't really enjoying making it as much as I had been, and kind of needed a change, and I just needed to stop being on the road. And so I had been doing some animation. I'd been teaching myself animation when I was home. And this is really early days, like kind of mid 80s, I guess, or maybe early 90s, I suppose. I've, you know, managed to find some 3D software, which was really hard to come by at the time, and was teaching myself to animate mostly because I wanted to do because I wanted to score animations like Ren and Stimpy, you know. That was sort of really hot at the time, and it was sort of the thing I wanted to do, but I didn't want to go out and have to get a job doing it. And so I taught myself to animate, and a friend who worked at, you know, in San Francisco, do you remember like MTV at all? Is that right?
Like, well, that's our generation totally, I think.
Yeah, we're the early 90s babies.
Yeah, so you remember Liquid Television?
Well, I don't know if that's a like bit before our time.
Okay, so it was like this animation program, like a show. And, you know, Eon Flux was a really big one.
I actually do remember this now. You have jogged a memory, yeah.
Right, and so MTV had this, you know, this show, I think it was Sunday Nights or whatever, that, you know, played these crazy-ass underground, really funny and weird animated bits. And then also they had, yeah, obviously, the interstitials, which were pretty famous, you know, the short little 5 to 15 second snippets, right? Mm-hmm. And the company that made all of those animations was called Colossal Pictures, and they were in San Francisco down in the Dog Patch area. And, you know, because I basically lived and breathed the underground of San Francisco during those decades, most of the people who worked there were good friends of mine, you know, that we were all at the same parties and they all came to our shows and whatnot. And so a friend who was a producer there had was coming over for dinner one night, and I had been working on my animation just, you know, because I was off tour and so didn't have anything else to do. And she happened to walk in and saw it and was like, holy shit, do you want a job? Like, and I was still in the band at the time. And I was like, no, I don't want a job. Like, I enjoy doing this. Like, if I get a job, it'll ruin it, you know? And so I didn't, you know, really talk about it much after that for about a year or so. And then when the band sort of decided to call it quits, or at least stop, we never really quit, but we did stop for sure. I gave her a call, and I swear within like 2 weeks I had a job at an animation studio. Not Colossal Pictures, it was one called Protozoa that was an offshoot from Colossal Pictures. Colossal kind of folded right around then and broke off into three different studios, if I recall correctly, some of them pretty legendary. And so that was sort of my entry point. And I did a lot of TV, and that's, we made a game and whatnot. And that trajectory, you know, 4 or 5 years later landed me in New Zealand doing Lord of the Rings. And you know, once you're in that universe, like, I basically had to, like, I would still be doing it if I hadn't, you know, pulled the plug and said, no, I'm going to go do something else now. So
what were some of the exact roles you were taking on something like Lord
What's
of the
that?
Rings? What were the exact roles you were taking on something like Lord of the Rings, for example, like exact things that you were working on?
Well, I did a ton of stuff on Lord of the Rings. You know, my job title was, I worked on the Massive team. Massive is the team that we did like all the large crowd stuff, you know, like the big battles with orcs and elves and whatnot. And it was all simulated. So
yeah, there was a kind of AI video game. Wasn't there?
Yeah, it was a fuzzy logic based kind of AI system. And so I was like the number 3 or 4 guy on that team. And so like I designed a lot of the way we call them brains, the brains worked and put together a lot of shots, you know, did a ton of scene work. But I was there for, you know, a good year and a half during pre-production. And so I also, because I had done motion capture previously at the company I was at Protozoa, I ended up directing and designing a lot of the motion capture. So I worked with like the stunt. There was like the sword master, and there was some stunt people, and we worked together designing all the different moves that all the different species would, you know, like, what does an elf look like with this type of sword? What are all the moves? What's the motion tree look like? You know, what a elf with a spear look like? What is this type of orc with this type of weapon? You know, it's a giant matrix of different species and weapons and combat styles and things that they needed to be able to do for the film. I still have, you know, the full visual effects breakdown storyboard books from Lord of the Rings. You know, there's thousands of shots, right?
I can imagine, yeah.
And so we broke down everything that was going to be in all three films, and then designed all the moves and the motion trees and whatnot, and then we'd bring actors, you know, in and capture them doing that. And so I did that. That was a big part, one of the big things I did. And then as an offshoot from that, when we did some of the, like, kind of not B-roll, but some of the not quite as huge fellowship body double scenes, you know, where we were doing digital doubles. That's the word I'm looking for. Doubles. When we did digital double scenes, I directed a bunch of that, which was super great because I got to direct Ian McKellen and, you know, all of them, basically Viggo Mortensen and Sean Bean. I directed the whole fellowship in motion capture, which was so funny and cool and fun, you know.
Man, mind blowing. Absolutely. I bet you had to pinch yourself a few times on set, didn't you? Just to be like, wow, this is quite something.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was working such long hours, I was pitching myself to make sure I actually was awake, you know?
Yeah. Well, Mike, that's absolutely fascinating. I'm glad to hear some background on that, because obviously that wasn't a subject of the last time we talked, so I had to get a bit of that in.
No, I generally don't bring this stuff up, just I'm getting on in years, and I've been really busy my whole life, and so there's just too much shit to talk about, you know?
It's true.
And I don't...
Even the stuff we've talked about today, there's so many tangents we could go off from them.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. Right. Exactly. And it's also why I, like, teach, you know, once a week at the school. It just gives me a chance to share some of that stuff. But I don't, you know, I don't talk about the film work or any of the early stuff either. Just music, you know?
Well, it's cool to hear some of that background then, Mike, and thanks very much for agreeing to talk for a second time.
Yeah, sure. It's always a pleasure.
Nice to meet you, Mike. Right.
Yeah, likewise, Dale.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.